House State Affairs Committee will please come to order. Second meeting of the legislative session. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Johansson?
Present.
Representative Wilson?
Present.
Representative Seaton?
Here.
Representative Keller?
Here.
Representative Gruenberg, not present. Representative Peterson?
Present.
Representative Chairlin?
Present. Thank you very much. This morning we have on the agenda HB3, requirements for a driver's license. And that's the only thing we have on the agenda this morning. And I don't know, Representative Gruenberg may still be ill, but we'll find out. If he's ill, it will be an excused absence. It's my hope that we can pass HB3 out of the committee today. And with that, I'd just like to do a short introduction and then have my staff get in down and dirty in the details. And it's amazing by Representative Gruenberg is present. By happenstance, the bill you're hearing today, HB3, concerning the driver's licenses, has the same bill number, HB3, as proposed legislation we considered in this committee and on the House floor last year. But the bills, I can assure you, are very, very different. For one thing, today's HB3 consists of a one-paragraph section, while last session's iteration of HB3 ran for 5 pages with 9 different sections. This bill today cuts, I think, directly to the chase. Under current statutes, Alaska driver's licenses are issued for a period of 5 years. That's a reasonable and satisfactory period of time for American citizens. Nothing in HB3 changes that time period at all. HB3 that we're considering today deals with those who are not United States citizens. Today, a non-citizen from anywhere in the world can be legally present in the United States with a passport, with a visa, a green card, or whatever that expires tomorrow. Yet they can go down to the DMV and get an Alaska driver's license that lasts for 5 years. And I hope you agree that that's not a very good situation. Again, HB3 is simple. It merely permits the DMV to issue a driver's license for less than 5 years to match the term of a non-citizen's legal presence document, such as a visa. In other words, if someone's visa expires in 6 months, so too with the driver's license. And I think that's just plain common sense. So with that, before we go to questions, I would ask my staffer, Thomas Riker, to go over the specific language of HB3. And we have, I hope, Whitney Brewster online. She'll be available for any comments she'd wish to make and for questions. I'd also like to welcome Thomas Riker. He's a new staffer with me this year, and this will be his first presentation. And hopefully not the last.
I am Thomas Riker, and I'm staff for Representative Lynn. So, members of the committee through the chair, the duty to determine how long someone is legally allowed to stay in the United States belongs to the Department of Homeland Security, not the state of Alaska. So we don't feel like it's a good situation for the state to be in, to be issuing legal documentation that outlasts the documentation that's been offered someone by the United States government. As Representative Lynn mentioned, HB3 would put an end to this practice simply by allowing the Department of Motor Vehicles to issue a license for less than 5 years if someone's legal presence in the United States is for a period of time less than 5 years. So if a person is authorized to stay in the U.S. for less than 5 years, the Alaska driver's license under HB3 would expire on the same date that their legal presence in the U.S. expires. If they're authorized to stay here indefinitely, then their Alaska driver's license would have to be renewed every year. That way the DMV can continually check to make sure they're still legally allowed to be here. We wanted to draft this bill in the simplest, most straightforward way possible, and that's why we didn't address ID cards. Currently, ID cards expire after 5 years just like driver's licenses, but that's been promulgated through regulation by the DMV. That's not in statute anywhere. And so we didn't want to put a 5-year expiration date in statute. We wanted to still leave that choice up to the DMV. However, they have communicated to us that if HB3 is passed, they'll set the same rules for ID cards that they have for driver's license. They just don't need extra authority and statute to do that. So really all we're doing here today is just giving them the opportunity to change their regulations because they feel that the way the statute is written right now requires them to extend a five-year driver's license to anyone who receives one. So with that, I'm available for your questions, and I think Whitney Brewster from DMV is as well.
Hi, Ms. Brewster, are you online? Ms. Brewster, are you online?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am available.
Fine, thank you very much. With that, do we have any questions to Mr. Riker or to Whitney Brewster? Okay, we're going to go to Representative Peterson first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to ask Whitney Brewster, currently when someone comes in to get a driver's license and they don't have a driver's license from another state, what's the procedure that's followed to what kind of identification is required for them to apply to get an Alaska driver's license?
For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. Through the Chair, Representative Peterson, an individual coming to the state of Alaska for an original license would be required to show proof of legal name and date of birth. They would also be required to show proof of their social security number as well as residence address. Once we have captured that information, upon renewal, we would not require all of that information again. But for an original license, that's what would be required.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if someone came in and didn't have that type of documentation or showed you a passport that showed that they were born in another country, were citizen of another country, you would still currently be able to issue them a driver's license for 5 years, is that correct?
Through the Chair, Representative Peterson, yes. If an individual showed us a foreign passport that was valid, the DMV would issue them a five-year license.
Okay, thank you.
I believe Representative Seaton is next.
Thank you. And following up on that question, so if someone comes in with a passport, they have to come in person and presents a passport, you can at that same time verify that that's a legal passport, and you'll issue on that day while they're there a driver's license or ID. Is that my understanding of what your testimony was?
Through the Chair, Representative Seaton, if they also have proof of residence address, yes, indeed, we would provide them with an Alaska driver license for a five-year period.
And follow-up?
Follow-up, please.
So, and what do they need to do for proof of resident address, such as, you know, one of the concerns is students. I mean, we have foreign students that we encourage to come to the university. They're here on short duration, you know, semester by semester, often extensions from the Homeland Security Immigration Service. So how do they verify and prove residence address at the university?
Through the Chair, Representative Seaton, we have a broad list of allowable documents to show residence address. It could be a utility bill, an Alaska voter registration card, a title, a vehicle title, a paycheck stub, medical assistance card, public assistance card, canceled check or bank statement, mortgage or rental document, a hotel, hostel, or shelter document. It's very broad.
Follow-up. My concern here is that I've talked to many students from here that have gone to foreign countries, and if they have to redo an ID or get an initial ID or driver's license, because the testimony here is that you're planning to use these same provisions in this for a driver's license to mirror for an ID, that how are they going to prove a resident's address when they first, you know, come to our schools here in Alaska and get this ID from you and get their driver's license or ID if you're going to mirror these regulations for foreign students visiting or enrolling in college here?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, we again provide a very broad list of allowable documents to show residence address. If they are living somewhere, if they're renting somewhere, we would accept a rental agreement that shows that address. If they receive any sort of mail at that address, we would use that. But we have to have some sort of proof of where they are to put on their license, so a license or ID card. So I understand the concern, but we do have a very broad list, and we work very closely with individuals who may have issues to assist them in getting what they need.
Follow-up?
Well, I appreciate that, but you know, we had testimony from students when we considered a similar bill in the past that they come here and of the problems trying to get this. I mean, if they go to the University of Alaska Fairbanks and is a note from the dorm adequate that they do it, or do they just have to mail themselves a letter to the dorm at the University of Alaska, and then you'll give them an ID for that time, and then when they come back in 6 months for the extension of the student visa, do they then go through that same process again?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, to answer the first part of your question, yes, it's something from the university indicating the dorm would work, as well as something that they sent themselves through the mail. Both of those items would work. To answer your second question regarding extending their license when they come back into the DMV, if their residence address has changed, yes, they should indicate to us that their residence address has changed, and we would put that in our system. But simply them coming in for their renewal, they're not required to show us again their residence address. They've already shown it to us once.
Okay. One more follow-up.
Okay, thank you. So my understanding then is when they get their 6 months extension for their visa to take another semester of school, they have to physically come in to the DMV and meet with a DMV agent, have a new picture taken, and the entire system to renew either an ID or a driver's license, is that correct? Or that will be was that the testimony that we heard here, that you're going to do that for student IDs as well?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, depending upon the passage of this legislation, the DMV would promulgate regulations that would describe what the process would be. But off the top of my head, I would assume that somebody who has a legal document that expires in 6 months, they would be required to come. Yes, they would be required to come into the DMV and show us the document that has extended their stay, so we could issue a follow-up license.
And one more, Mr. Chairman, please.
Well, that's it.
Thank you.
For now.
And the question is, then what is the cost of that? And I see zero fiscal note, and if a student comes in and they're coming in here for 2 years to work on a doctorate at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and they have to come in for a new ID every 6 months, and there's no fiscal note on this, is that correct? And can you explain that to me?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, this legislation allows the DMV to promulgate regulations. There is no cost to the DMV to promulgate regulations. If the regulations required additional materials to produce cards at that time, we would put forward a fiscal impact in when we promulgate the regulations.
Thank you very much. We can come back later. I believe Representative Johansson, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. More of a customs quiz, just because I'm not familiar with the term. And if your staff or you don't have an answer, that's fine. I don't want to hold the bill up, but I'll certainly ask some of my friends on finance to ask this when it gets upstairs. Indefinite stay, authorized as an indefinite stay under, I assume, the customs rules. Can we define what that means? I'm just unfamiliar with what that is.
Could you pull the microphone a little closer to you?
Sure.
And through the chair, Representative Johansson, my understanding is that those are largely provisional documents, people who are allowed in the country, but you know, their status might be in dispute, and so later on they'll get a definite expiration date, but when they're first allowed, say, for asylum or something like that, then they get an indefinite length of stay. However, Ms. Brewster might be able to speak to some other instances where the indefinite length of stay is offered.
Ms. Brewster?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I would agree with what Mr. Riker stated. These documents that we are seeing are those that are for customers who have a pending status, and right now we are issuing them a five-year license.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Wilson? Excuse me. Representative Peterson's next. I beg your pardon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to ask Ms. Brewster, so if they come in every 6 months to renew their license, they would have to pay the driver's license fee. Is the fee would be the same for a 6 month license as it would be for a 5 year license, or do we have to set those regulations are undetermined at this point? Do we know about that?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, the statute sets the fees for driver licenses. for a license, whether it's 5 years or in the case of passage of this bill and regulations passing a shorter time frame, because that's set in statute, it would be $20.
Okay, one more,
Representative Peterson.
Thank you. This isn't related to this bill, but I was wondering if someone comes in from a foreign country to try to get an Alaska license, are they required to take a driving test to prove that they are able to drive?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, yes, they are required to take a driving test as well as a vision and a written test.
Thank you.
I can tell you, having traveled in several different foreign countries, if you can drive in some of these other country, you can sure as heck drive here. Representative Wilson.
My question got answered.
Okay, thank you. Representative Seaton?
I guess, and is this just for Ms. Brewster or your?
Either one you'd like to address it.
Okay, I guess I'm, from testimony was that on the explanation of the bill that Homeland Security is in charge of establishing people's stay in the United States. And we know that people, whether it's from Haiti or from other places, when the or someone asking for asylum, if the Homeland Security decides that it's going to take quite a while to give them paperwork, they're not concerned about their staying here, so they give them an indefinite stay. Why would the state of Alaska want to basically override Homeland Security and say that we are going to have every year contact with that person, when the Division of Homeland Security have said that they are going to give them an indefinite stay, basically because they're not worried about their security or status?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, number one, I'm not sure that that's necessarily what the indefinite stay means. I think it means that they're still determining whether they're worried about their status or not. So we want to make sure that we don't extend them legal documentation that ends up being contrary to what Homeland Security decides. But number two, I would say that it's really just a monitoring mechanism to make sure that if Homeland Security changes their provisional status, number one, if they change it to, say, 10 years or 5 years or whatever, then that person would have the opportunity at the end of that 1 year to, get a license that reflects that. But also, if they shorten it, we want to make sure that, again, we haven't extended them, documentation that's contrary to the documents that they're getting from the federal government. So if it's provisional right now or indefinite right now, and, a year from now it's been downgraded to 6 months or 3 months or whatever, we want that to be reflected in their documents from Alaska as well.
Ms. Brewster, would you agree with that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Brewster, my question is, how would you know if they were downgraded to 6 months because they could show the same papers that they had the first time?
Good question.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's a very good point. There are electronic systems available. The DMV is not currently hooked up to this system that would allow the DMV to see the status of an individual coming into the DMV to confirm the document that they have. It's called the Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlement System. As I stated, we are not currently hooked up to that system, but that would be one method for confirming the validity of the documents that they're showing.
Representative Wilson?
Ms. Brewster, you're not currently hooked up to it, so you wouldn't be able to verify at this time. Are there plans for you to be able to be hooked up to it so that you could verify?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, if this bill were to pass and it was the will of the legislature, the DMV would be happy to consider that as a good aid for implementation. But to answer your specific question, no, there is no current plan to hook up to this system.
One more?
Yes.
Do you have any idea how much it would cost to hook up to that system?
You stole my question. That's great.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I have gotten a preliminary figure of about $200,000.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee?
Yes.
Representative Grunberg.
I'd like to reserve questions until all the witnesses have testified, if we can make sure these other people stand by.
Yeah, that's not a question. That's a request. Okay. Any other questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. If we were going to implement this and for the indefinite stays, as Representative Wilson talked about, and that's a necessary part for you to be able to verify that, wouldn't that necessarily be in your fiscal note?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that would be in a fiscal note likely associated with the regulations that we pass.
But not the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I guess I'm trying to understand. If we can't implement the bill, we don't have the data system to implement the bill, unless we have a way to verify these things, how is that not going to be a fiscal note required under the bill? Otherwise, we have a bill that really we don't have implementation. I guess I'm concerned that we're setting up a kind of a default line where we would have a bill that requires us to have this fiscal expenditure, and yet we're not showing it on here. But if we don't have it, we can't really implement the bill because, as Representative Wilson said, the previous paper for indefinite stay could just be shown, and there you'd just be getting another driver.
So this would affect what your point is. this would not affect anything other than the indefinite part, perhaps.
That's correct.
Ms. Brewster?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, as the chairman referenced, this would be strictly for those who have indefinite printed on their legal documents, and so I would disagree that implementation would not be possible. It by and large, we do not see a very large number of those with a pending status. Those are very, very few. But again, this legislation, the way that I read it, states that the department may adopt regulations. There is no requirement that the DMV adopt it. It just gives us the authority, if we so choose, to adopt those regulations. So the legislation itself really has no requirement for the DMV to do this. It just allows us to do it. Now, if we were to do it through regulation, and it was the intent for the DMV to hook up to the systematic alien verification for entitlement system, we would then put forward a fiscal note in the amount of approximately $200,000.
Okay. Reverend Johansson is next.
Thank you. Ms. Brewster, you mentioned that there are very few of these cases of the indefinite stay. So I'm assuming very few means very few. So this bill, without the $200,000, can you just pick up the phone and call Customs and Border Protection on these very few cases and say, what's the deal?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, thank you for bringing that up. Yes, yes, that is indeed true. We do that currently when we receive documents that we're not quite sure what they are. We have a very good relationship with the United States Customs and Immigration Services Agency, and that's indeed what we would do.
Representative Johansson?
Thank you. So would it be fair to say it would be nice to have the $200,000 and it would make life a lot easier, this bill can be implemented just fine by using the phone for the time being until that issue is taken up by the legislature as an appropriation?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, yes.
Thank you.
Do you have any kind of gross estimate of how many of these cases come before you where you might have to check?
Mr. Chairman, I just have anecdotal information. That's not information that we capture, but just in the Benson office, which is our main office, I would speculate that we see maybe one a day.
Okay. Representative Keller.
Yeah, the question is, what is this bill going to prevent? And I'd like sponsor to respond and maybe Mr. Riker, but it comes to my mind that a good way to think about this is what a person needs that comes into this country if he wants something that falls in the entitlement arena, like health care, public school, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I'm not sure what's required if I go to a school, for example, but I would think that an ID or a driver's license would be very helpful to enroll in entitlement programs in our country. And the reason that's kind of a lead-in maybe to your answer, but I was wondering if there's other things that this bill accomplishes other than just kind of gives us a some kind of a tally. What's going on?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, I think one of the big issues is reciprocity. If you have an Alaska driver's license, you can go to any other state in the union, and they're going to treat it as valid. And so, that then, in again, as you said, it's different for different states, but that driver's license is going to be a key to a lot of services. It's also going to, just keep you on the roads. So if you end up in New York or New Mexico or wherever, suddenly your ability to get legal documentation there, in a lot of cases your ability to apply for housing and things like that, is extended beyond what the federal government has said is appropriate for you, because the state of Alaska has given you legal documentation that lasts past your legal stay here. So I think for us, one of the biggest things that we wanted to stop was, you know, not only stopping our issuance and the reciprocity in other states, but also then stopping any instances of people from other states coming to Alaska with, say, their New York or New Mexico driver's license that's going to expire when their legal presence expires, and get an Alaskan one that lasts for 5 years, and then go back to New York or New Mexico, because it's a way around the system.
Thank you. Precisely. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Brewster, because of the may in this bill, if this bill is passed, you really don't have to do anything. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I by reading this bill, would answer yes.
Okay. Follow up?
Well, I'm just a little concerned that the bill really doesn't do anything then. And maybe we should tighten it up a little bit, say they shall. I mean, if it's a concern, I don't.
Maybe I could.
Yeah. Representative Grunberg?
If I may, in follow up to Representative Wilson's question. As I understand it, Ms. Brewster, you do not feel you have the statutory authority to do it now, and you can't do it without this bill. So you may not do it now unless the bill is passed and says you may do it. Is that correct from what you said?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, if I understood you correctly, yes.
A second question. I hope that answers. Second question. When you first, and these are to Ms. Brewster, when you first testified, you said you lacked the authority to issue these licenses for less than 5 years, but you apparently already have the authority to issue IDs for less than 5 years. Is that correct? And if so, I'd like the statutory citation, please.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, the statutes dealing with ID cards are very very short, and they essentially point to the driver license legislation, or I'm sorry, statutes. But it does. There is a section in the ID card statute that says it's 1865.310. B, a person may obtain an identification card provided for in A of this section by applying to the department on form and in the manner prescribed by the department. And so we could, through regulation under that statute, set those standards.
As I understand, this bill does not relate to ID card, it relates to driver's licenses.
Well, I understand that was the reason, but in the past, when we're talking about, when we've often talked about the others, 1865.310, was that the citation, ma'am?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, yes.
I see. And you believe, and once again, that statute states, a person may obtain an identification card provided for in A of this section by applying to the department on forms and in the manner prescribed by the department. And it talks about department shall issue a card identical to the motor vehicle license provided for, et cetera. That's in subsection A of that statute. Okay, I see what you're saying. With respect to, if I may follow up, please.
Follow up.
With respect to the questions by various members on fiscal notes, the statute, as I understand it, that governs fiscal notes is AS 24.08.035, particularly subsection A, which states in relevant part, a fiscal note must be attached to the bill, quote, containing an estimate of the amount of the appropriation increase or decrease that would result from enactment of the bill for the current fiscal year and the five succeeding fiscal years, or if the bill has no fiscal impact, a statement to that effect shall be attached. Given that that's the standard, Ms. Brewster, are you stating that you would not be seeking, because of this bill, an increase in the appropriation for the DMV?
Ms. Brewster?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, no, the DMV is not requesting an increase or decrease in its appropriation for this bill.
If I may follow up, please.
Follow up.
Given that it will obviously take additional time to process these people, and given that you're not seeking an additional appropriation, what diminution in service, what additional time will it take the other applicants to go through the DMV if you have to service these people more often than the other folks? How will that affect the public's waiting time?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, it should not have an impact on the wait time at the DMV. When we would pick up the phone to talk to the United States Customs and Immigration Services Agency would be those instances where there is an indefinite stay. And as I stated earlier, there are very few of those. So a matter of one phone call, which could be done by a manager in the back room while other customers are serviced at the counter, would have a very minimal impact. And in my opinion, not necessary to put in a fiscal note.
Okay, if I may follow up,
and then Representative Seaton, and then I want to get to public testimony.
Of course. We've had a number of concerns, I think I'm expressing that term correctly, concerns by other members of the committee, and I would like to echo them on the fact that an indefinitely authorized stay or a period of the term, I think, would be, quote, indefinitely authorized stay or something like that. That is not defined in here, and I'm concerned that we don't have a definition, and I would just like to suggest to the committee and the witness how we could define that so we know, since that apparently is a term of art, that maybe it should be defined in some manner as an authorized stay for an indefinite period as defined by federal regulation or something. I'm not sure how you do it, but I do think that term is somewhat in
indefinite.
Yeah, it's vague. Ms. Brewster or Tom, do you either you want to comment on that, if I may, Mr. Chair? I think it should be defined in the bill.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I don't disagree with you on that. I mean, we could certainly define it just based upon what the federal government says, or I think it would also be fine to just, you know, say a document without an expiration date, or I don't know what they look like, and that would be a question for Ms. Brewster.
I hate to do it on the fly. That's right.
Well, yeah, it's just a matter of just checking Webster's dictionary, actually, I think.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Brewster, would you care to comment on my question, ma'am?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I wouldn't disagree that a definition would be helpful of what indefinite means. I don't have a definition to provide the committee at this time, but I'd be happy to work with the sponsor on formulating that, as well as consultation with United States Customs and Immigration Services.
Yeah, it shouldn't take long, but we need to, I think, clarify that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, you know, one of my primary concerns has been for foreign students that we encourage to come to the state of Alaska to, you know, engage with us, as well as foreign exchange students in our high schools and those kind of things. So I guess my question is that those that come here on those kind of issues are generally going to have a passport and could receive from their institution, such as the University of Alaska, a student ID. So is there any necessity for those people that aren't going to drive to get a an Alaska ID?
Through the chair, Representative Eaton, if they are not going to be driving, they already have documents showing that, you know, showing like who they are. So a state ID card would not be necessary.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the committee to who we have now? If not, I'd like to close public testimony, open. I've got it backwards. I'd like to open public testimony now. Do we have Jeffrey Mittman? Are you there, please?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Good to talk to you, Mr. Mittman. Last time we talked, I think it was on a TV program.
That's right. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify. My name is Jeffrey Mittman. I'm the Executive Director of the ACLU of Alaska. Thank the Chair of the Committee for the opportunity to testify regarding the bill. As the Chair and some of the members know, the concern of the ACLU of Alaska is not with policy matters generally, but specifically with legislation that comes before the committees and the legislature as to the constitutional concerns that may arise. With respect to this bill, unfortunately, we have concerns. The issues raised by HB3 are really those that have come up before the United States Supreme Court really for the last 70 years. I have several cases to cite to, and with the chair's permission, I will forward to the committee and to the members of the committee some sites so they can review more carefully. Very simply, though, the issue is one of what is the proper role of the federal government and the state governments generally as to issues of immigration and which individuals are lawfully in the country. That is an area of the law that the federal government reserves to itself, and it is very jealous and very careful whenever state regulation impinges or imposes on that area. So, for example, in a 1941 case before the U.S. Supreme Court, Hines v. Davidowitz, a Pennsylvania statute requiring a renewal every year of an identification card was found to be unconstitutional. There's a series of cases that have followed. What might be most instructive for the committee is a recent decision that came up to the Supreme Court in the year 2010, and that was Lozano v. City of Hazleton. As you recall, the city in Pennsylvania, again, passed regulation regarding who was allowed to be resident. And again, as they had back in the 1940s, the Supreme Court found that it was not appropriate use of the non-federal regulatory powers. An issue here is the driver's license. A driver's license is intended to determine who may lawfully and safely drive a car. It's not to be used as an identification document. In addition to federal problems, there's also state constitutional problems. Under the state constitution, there would be equal protection violations. When you are burdening an individual based on their immigration status, that is something that the courts have typically looked at very carefully. It's what's known as a suspect class. It opens up individuals to, on a practical matter, racial profiling, but on a legal and constitutional matter, it opens them up to being treated differently without an appropriate governmental interest. So for a variety of reasons, unfortunately, as drafted, the bill would be subject to finding of unconstitutionality both on federal and state grounds.
So you're saying it could be unconstitutional for the state of a sovereign state of Alaska to establish standards for somebody to have a driver's license?
If it is clear that, through the chair, if it is clear that the bill has implications for residency status that relate to immigration status, and because the way it is drafted, that it says that if a person is authorized to stay in the United States for less than 5 years, or the period of authorized stay is indefinite, because that is based on federal immigration issues and federal alien issues, that would be an impingement on a federal area of the law and would run into problems as far as the federal government occupying the field.
It, I have information Alaska is only one of six states that doesn't have a legal presence requirement. Are all those other states, are they violating the Constitution?
So, again, Mr. Chair, for example, if the state of Alaska were to require a legal presence, that would be different than a requirement that the license issued to the individual would be different than license issued to other individuals. So it's not the legal presence per se, it's that an individual might be, for example, required to come back to the DMV on frequent occasions, so that the license being issued to them and the process for them obtaining a license is different based on their immigration status. Of course, as a practical matter, the problem is that federal regulations regarding residency are obviously very complex, and putting a burden on a state department of understanding the complexities of federal immigration law as a practical matter can be problematic. You're going to have issues of individuals who may perhaps be entitled to one type of license being issued another. So it's not that the state can't require somebody to be lawfully present. It's that you are issuing a different type of license based on an allegedly differential status.
So if my driver's license requires that I wear glasses, am I being treated differently from folks who don't wear glasses?
Again, that's an excellent question, Mr.
I mean, that's a different class of people. I'm handicapped. I'm going to have to wear glasses.
So two answers. One is obviously your eyesight relates directly to your ability to drive, your ability to see, your ability to perceive vehicular hazards, and clearly is directly related to the purpose of the driver's license. As a second matter, there have been no court cases that I'm aware of that have found that the class of individuals with diminished eyesight that is not a disability are a suspect class.
That's a good project for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Keller.
Thank you, Jeffrey. I was wondering if you would comment on every citizen is a dual citizen. We have state citizenship and we have federal, and in Alaska, that has a pretty special meaning to us Alaskans. For one thing, we're charged with the responsibility for developing and conserving and managing our natural resources for the residents of Alaska. It's a very significant thing. And every bill that gets introduced is, you made the comment, this bill is open to question on constitutional basis. I believe that's true of every bill that there is out there, and that is part of our charge too, is to make those kind of determinations of what is constitutional and what is not. And anyway, I would just like your comments about dual citizenship, and again, we have a responsibility to watch out for what it means to be an Alaskan citizen as legislators.
The question of citizenship obviously is very important, and there are broad areas of state citizenship regulation which obviously fall squarely within the realm of what state regulations can be drawn up. The issue here is that the bill clearly relates to an area that the federal government holds as its own. And the Supreme Court has typically found that state intervention into federal immigration issues is generally disfavored. So state police powers regarding state citizenship, clearly not an issue. We'd be hard-pressed to find issues where a federal or state court would interfere with the state's rights as to state constitutionality, as to citizenship requirements to be a citizen of the state. But where there's an existing scheme where the federal government establishes rules as to non-U.S. citizens who can enter the country, state regulations that interfere in that area really are very suspect.
But this does not involve people entering the country or not entering the country. This involves issuing a driver's license to folks who are already here, right? Or am I missing something?
The issue has to do with the first three lines of the bill, where it says, where a person's may issue a driver's license with a duration of less than 5 years if the person is authorized to stay in the United States for less than 5 years. Individuals who are authorized to stay in the state for less than 5 years are individuals who are presumably non-U.S. citizens, individuals from outside the country. In other words, these are foreign individuals who are coming into the United States. Regulation of entry and exit to the United States, regulation of determination of status within the United States are made by the federal government. So the issue is that this clearly, or at least we would argue, is clearly related to federal immigration status.
Well, if they're here with a authorized visa, green card, whatever, the decision has already been made, has it not? That they have a right to be here.
The decision has been made by the federal government,
right.
And clearly, if this were a U.S. congressional bill, there is no way I could testify before Congress that Congress didn't have the authority to regulate, because that's absolutely an area where Congress can. The problem is that this is a state. If any state were to seek to adopt a regulation like this that impinged on federal regulation standards, that's where the constitutional infirmities began.
Okay, thank you, Representative Keller.
Yeah, I fail to see how any not having or not allowing or not authorizing, and then that's not what this bill does. But you say it went that far. A driver's license or an ID would be a challenge to anyone's right to be here. So I don't see the connection to begin with. But even if it's there, you know, there's so many areas that the federal government now reserves and protects carefully to itself, you know, that I just am a little skeptical of your points.
Through the chair. Representative, the issue is that essentially we're creating two classes of driver's licenses. We're creating a standard Alaska driver's license for 5 years, and then we're creating a less than class of driver's license. And that is given to individuals who would then seek to renew. And again, the case Hines v. Davidowitz, it's 312 U.S. 52. It's a fairly old case, 1941, but it was almost identical. It required aliens to have a special identification card, which need to be renewed every year. And this card was required, in fact, to be able to drive a drive car to obtain a license. Because Congress reserved this area to itself, that requirement was found unconstitutional. So it's that we're creating sort of a dual class of driver's license, not based on state concerns of are you a safe driver, but based on your federal immigration status.
Okay. Representative Grunberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have also been concerned about some of the constitutional issues here, not specifically thinking about the two that you have mentioned, which is the issue of supremacy, whether the field is an exclusively federal one, and not necessarily the equal protection argument. We don't have the benefit of your legal memorandum or the citations, and I would like to see those, and I'd also like to maybe be able to do a little research. We talked a little bit with the Ledge Legal Counsel yesterday about this, but not about those particular issues, and I'm not aware whether other states have struck down similar statutes, and I'm not sure whether there are any that don't involve just status but involve this kind of a thing, since you've talked a little bit, Mr. Mittman, about the difference between this statute and other status statutes. But I am concerned about a state constitutional right that you haven't mentioned, and that is the fact that the state Supreme Court has held on a number of occasions that a driver's license represents an important property interest that's protected by the due process clause of the Alaska Constitution. And that's a citation from the case of Javed, J-A-V-E-D, versus the Department of Public Safety Division of Motor Vehicles. Site is 921 P. Second 620. And I'm wondering, since that is a fundamental right, whether that might be impinged or have constitutional issues as well. Any comments, sir?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, appreciate the question. Again, because the status of one's presence in the country, an immigration or alien status, is what's known as a suspect class. If there's if something is considered a property right, there could be significant due process concerns if an impingement on that right is drawn in such a way that it is not tailored appropriately, it does not meet the balancing test that the courts apply to determine whether a government or regulation is appropriately tailored. So again, it's not that a state government might not be able to infringe on the right, it's the way it is done and how it's done, how narrowly or how broadly, and what interest it's serving. So for example, if it were drawn up in such a way as the purpose it was serving were to ensure that a driver were a safe driver or that the streets could be appropriately negotiated, that might be something the courts would look on kindly. If the intention is to ensure that somebody is meeting a requirement of the Department of Homeland Security, a federal immigration requirement, that's something the courts could look askance at.
May I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Yes, that's a thing that concerns me here. From a constitutional point of view, and I know this goes to judiciary afterwards, and we have three members of this committee who are on both committees, but I think that we have to be careful that we follow our constitutional. Oh, it doesn't go to judiciary. Oh, it only goes to finance. Well, this, with these additional issues, I'm not sure that maybe a judiciary referral is not warranted, but that's particularly concerning. Thank you very much.
Representative Johansson.
But which I didn't get my question, if I may.
I thought that was a question, but go ahead.
No, my question is, because there does not appear to be a nexus or a connection between the length of the license and anything connected with driving or safety or anything like that, does the Constitution require to be upheld that there be some kind of a nexus between the limitation and driving?
Through the chair, I think that's exactly it. If there were, clearly, it is absolutely within the state's power to regulate its streets and highways to determine who has an opportunity to drive based on a state's determination of what driving skills are required. That's something that I can't imagine many courts finding constitutional infirmities with those sorts of regulations. The problem here is that it's difficult to see how one's immigration status relates to one's ability to drive a vehicle. Either you're a safe driver or not, either you understand the street signs or not. So the courts will look at what is the purpose of the regulation, and is this a purpose that falls within the state's power, or is it beginning to come into an area that has to do with federal regulation? I do want to add, I apologize to the chair, it has been our practice in the last few years to provide in advance of hearing some written testimony, and I will certainly get that to the committee today, to the chair and to the members of the committee, and that will have some written citations for further review.
Yes, I am concerned, and I hope we will have that in front of us, because these are very serious constitutional issues, Mr. Chair.
I have a question for whoever can answer. I suppose, Mr. Mittman, this is actually written from my staffer here. It says, under current law, we issue documentation that lasts longer than the federal government immigration documents, and how is that constitutional? and the feds say that someone should be a resident for 3 years, and we issue a five-year license, that's contrary to federal policy. Do you agree with that?
Mr. Chair, so the issue is, what is the purpose of a document? A driver's license of the state of Alaska would never be presumed to determine whether or not somebody has a right to stay in the country. So, for example, if I were to go to an INS hearing and the hearing officer said to me, Mr. Mittman, you do not have the right to be in this country, and I held up for him and I said, well, here's my Alaska driver's license. The state of Alaska said I can be in the country. He'd laugh me out of the room. So whether or not I have an Alaska driver's license does not determine my ability to be or not be in the country. So if we issue somebody a license for 5 years and their stay in the country is only permissible for an additional 3 years, at the end of 3 years' time, their stay is up. It doesn't matter if they have a contract with the electric company to pay a bill. It doesn't matter if they have a lease on a department. The federal government determines whether or not they can stay in the country. So if we are we are currently issuing licenses that may exceed somebody's right to be in the country is not a constitutional problem. The government determines whether or not they can be here at the federal level.
That's basically what we're saying here, is it not? Am I missing something? The driver's license has nothing to do with whether you are here legally or not.
Correct, but the issue is that the way this regulation is drafted, it burdens an individual and creates two kinds of driver's licenses. It says, if because of your issues with the federal government as to your residency, you now have the burden of having to get a different kind of driver's license, of returning to the state DMV on multiple occasions, of establishing your status. You are now making of a state-level function, which is your ability or not to safely drive a car, a sort of pseudo-immigration document. And that's not permitted by the federal government because of preemption and supremacy issues. It's also problematic on constitutional grounds, because you are burdening somebody with who is again the suspect class. You're burdening them with some requirement. So you're mixing functions. The driver's license function has to do with the state powers to patrol the roads. It should not begin to inquire into the areas of your status in the country as an immigrant or alien.
Representative Keller, did you have a question?
No, I'll pass. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Representative Johansson?
Thank you. Two things. First of all, I guess probably in all actuality, the testimony from the last minute from this gentleman.
Again, please?
The testimony in the last minute of this gentleman about going into a federal court or in front of the federal government and saying an Alaska driver's license doesn't mean anything, and you know, yes, you will be laughed out of court, but, you know, the ACLU may live in court, but I live out in the real world, and a driver's license on the street in the real world can get you things that, yes, maybe you'll be laughed out of court, but when you're on the street living in America, you can get things with a driver's license. Okay, that's point number one. Point number two is I agree with Representative Keller. We can put the Constitution down and say the judge is going to do this, the judge is going to do that. I think this testimony in whole is leading us down a little rabbit trail of confusion and muddying the waters. I think the bill is good. I think it's to sit here and try and say the judge is going to do this, the judge isn't going to do that. Nobody's going to tell me what a judge is going to do until a judge is going to do it, and it'll probably end up there anyway. And I think we should move this bill. And just to bring the Constitution up to try and get it to go to judiciary and slow it down and mess it up, I think is disingenuous. And I support the bill, and I hope we move it today.
Okay, Representative Keller.
I just want to—I can't help but comment that you have cited the federal courts and the federal Supreme Court, as a basis for us making a decision here on this law that's very important to the state of Alaska. Those are both agencies of the federal government. For areas that they protect they're areas of sovereignty, but we certainly have the responsibility to protect our own sovereignty in the state. And so to use a 1941 Supreme Court case, even though I respect and appreciate very much the Supreme Court, it just doesn't cut it for me. I'm with Representative Johansson, and I'm saying let's move this bill.
Representative Sheehan, then we're going to this is for Mr. Bittman.
The question's for Mr. Bittman. Yes, Mr. Bittman, we've been talking about the indefinite stay documents issued by Homeland Security, and I'm concerned that now we've heard that there's basically one a day in Anchorage, and which seems quite a few. But other than refugee status, are you familiar with what those indefinite stays would be? And I guess I'm concerned that if we have refugees that we're given, that Homeland Security is giving, or asylum, that they're giving indefinite stay documents to, it's probably because they don't have other documentation such as the a passport from the country they left. So I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out if we're going to burden asylum seekers and refugee folks that they have to go down more often, are there other folks that have this indefinite stay kind of documentation from Homeland Security other than refugees or asylum seekers?
Thank you, through the chair. Our expertise, obviously, in the area of federal immigration law is fairly limited. My understanding is the same as yours, that asylum seekers, refugees, are individuals who have a differential stay statuses that are under review. It's not a normal immigration procedure. So those would certainly be individuals who could very well be subject to this. To revisit the last comment, I do want to make clear that the Supreme Court, again, did look at these issues. There's the 2010 case. It's the City v. Hazleton, 620 F3rd, 170. That's a Third Circuit case. So the federal courts are continuing to find that these sorts of regulations are problematic. In addition, the Alaska State Court, in looking at this issue, the State Department of Revenue v. Andrade, in 2001, the site is 23 P3rd 58, and this is, again, a recent Alaska State Court case, has again looked at these issues. So this is not purely the federal courts that have found problems in this area, and these are not all old cases. They are as recent as 2001 and 2010 at both the state and federal level.
So one more.
Yeah, no, just a clarification. So you're not aware of any indefinite stay documents other than asylum and refugees that are issued. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, we are not, but I will certainly see if there are other classes that might be implicated.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there anybody, thank you, Mr. Bittman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anybody else online who would wish to testify? Is there anybody in the audience here would like to add comments, testify? If not, I'm going to close public testimony and bring it to the committee to see what their wishes are.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'm ready to make a motion when you're ready to move the bill. So
when you're ready. We're going to go down the line. Everybody make comments, and then we'll do what we do. I believe you're next. Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, I am extremely concerned about these constitutional issues, and I'm concerned we don't even have a definition of indefinite stay in the bill. But this bill does not go to judiciary, and we have not even received the legal citations from Mr. Mittman. I see we have Mr. Lockhart in the audience here, and I think that particularly because no other committee in the House we'll look at these legal issues, and it's early in the session, we have a duty on this committee to consider those, or frankly, I will ask for a judiciary referral, and we can either do it here or in the Judiciary Committee. But these issues we can't just wink at and say, let the courts decide, because these folks will be in on an injunction, and the law probably will be enjoined, and they'll ask why we didn't consider these things further. And this is not a laughing matter. I think they're serious. I know, neither am I. We're dealing with some very fundamental rights and some very important federal issues here. And I think at the very least in this committee, we need to have them fully aired. If not this committee, then another committee, because we just can't wink at it. And this is the first bill that has presented these issues. And I think it's important that we establish the precedent on this committee that we are a deliberative committee, and we don't just wink at things and pass the bills out, because if we do that, this committee will lose its credibility, among other things. And it's better to take a little time and do this thing right than rush to judgment. And I would like to hear from what Mr. Mittman has to say, and hear that in writing and do the legal research, and then maybe Mr. Lockup or anybody else. But I think this should be fully explored, and I've said that on the record, and I feel strongly about that.
Sure.
Representative Keller.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that. Representative Gruenberg, and I would assume that you are more concerned about the state constitution implications than not. Maybe I'm wrong there, but, you know, I think it's completely appropriate to ask for a state AG consideration of our state constitution.
I have no problem with that at all.
And on a second point, the definition of indefinite, I mean, I think that again, that's not a term, a legal term. I don't think that necessarily has a Black's Law, debate around it. I think Webster's would be appropriate on indefinite. And I think it's an interesting point, but I don't see that as a reason to hold up the bill.
If I may respond.
Yes.
On the second point, I just want to be sure that's drafted correctly. And it could take a day or so to look at and make sure, because we want to be sure that's drafted right. I don't consider that a major thing, but I'd like to take a day or so and get that done right. The most important thing are these constitutional issues. This is important, and we're going to be sitting on these committees for the next several years together. And when particularly, and I didn't realize this wasn't going to judiciary, I probably would have said something.
Yeah, it's on when it's right here on the bill.
Yeah, but when the thing was originally referred, because in the past this bill has gone to judiciary because of these constitutional issues, among others. And these are very important, and it's important for the record for courts as well to know that we fully considered them, because any lawyer worth his or her salt will say to a judge, this thing was rushed out of committee when these issues were raised. They didn't even wait to get the time to get the legal memorandum. Here's the records of the minutes.
Well, I think it's my intention to ask for an opinion from the AG on these issues that you and others raised.
That's fair. And I think that then we can consider that and do this deliberately, and the committee will do what you want. And if the votes are there, the votes are there, or whatever. But at least we have the record, and you've been always fair. And I know everybody on this committee is a very fair person. That's all I'm asking.
Okay. Any other comment from
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Johansson?
Thank you. Two things. First of all, I know that Representative Gruenberg is usually very careful with his comments, for the implication that we're winking at bills and letting them out of committee really bothers me, because I take this very seriously. I know he didn't mean any ill will by that, but by no means are we shoveling bills out of committee and not dealing with the business that is under the jurisdiction of this committee. Committee assignments are up to the presiding officer. This was sent to State Affairs and Finance. This is a bicameral legislature. They have a whole other body on the other side to go to.
That's true.
Just because the ACLU says there are legal issues doesn't mean that we have to throw this thing to the judiciary. That's up to the presiding officer. So you guys can make that argument to the speaker, but I don't see any problem. And I think we ought to move it out and send it to Finance. If the presiding officer on the other side wants to send it to judiciary, that's his business.
Well, I would prefer to move the bill out. However, as a matter of courtesy to a fellow committee member, I think it would be better to get the AG opinion. Hopefully he can, I don't know how long it would take him to do that, but I would like to bring it back at the next committee and move it out, you know, at that time. I don't buy into some of these arguments, but still, as a matter of courtesy to a fellow committee member, a longtime colleague, I'm going to not pass the bill out today.
Thank you.
And we will ask when we get back to the office for AG opinion. I frankly, myself, I think I don't know that it's necessary, but as a matter of courtesy, I'm going to do that.
Mr. Chair, what's one thing?
Well, we're just about done here, yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think we're going to be getting a memorandum from Mr. Mittman, and maybe it would be helpful for, if he can get that very quickly, we can transmit that to the AG so they can see
We're not going to wait 6 months to get Mr. Mittman.
I think he said this today he could do it, or in the next.
This amendment I saw online? Mr. Mittman, are you still online?
Mr. Chairman, I am, and yes, the committee will have that memorandum, and I will copy it to all of the members of the committee. You will have it well before 5 o'clock today.
That's fair. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm concerned about the indefinite stay so far from the committee staff as well as from testifiers. And from the department, we've found that there's quite a few, at least one a day in the Anchorage office, and that my understanding is all of these people, because we haven't heard of any other class, are refugees and asylum seekers who Homeland Security has given indefinite status to. So I'm very concerned that these are generally folks that we have let into the country and into our state, and yet they are probably have the least ability to go multiple times, once a year instead of once every 5 years, down to DMV in person to establish themselves, to pay the additional fees, and I understand where the finance fiscal note would be is because DMV makes us money. So if these guys are having to come in, these people, men and women, are having to come in once a year and pay the fee that more than pays for the documentation, then I understand that, but I think that these are probably people that we've let into our state and into the country under Homeland Security that are going to that we're actually burdening in time and finance for, and I don't understand the reason why we would want to do that. So just to bring it up for our next hearing, so everyone's aware, I'm probably going to make an amendment to remove that final line for the indefinite stay.
In general term, what might the amendment be?
The amendment would be just to remove that final sentence on indefinite stay, because so far our testimony has been that those are asylum seekers and refugees who the federal government has determined can be here on indefinite stay, and to burden them with more fees and more time and trips to the DMV than anyone else seems to be inappropriate for the state. If the federal government is in fairly close contact, I think, with asylum seekers and refugees that they allow, and so if they determine they're going to kick them out of the country, they're going to kick them out of the country. But for us to have a burden that comes in and says we're going to make sure that they come in every year under an indefinite stay Homeland Security document does not seem to me to be necessary for us to do in the state. And I think that is a small enough class of people, refugees and asylum seekers, that the Homeland Security has a really good handle on them, because it's a very, it's a class of people that are specifically allowed under that document. Like I say, we've heard no one else has come forward with anyone else that gets that status other than asylum seekers and refugees. So I just wanted to bring it up that I will probably make that amendment for that reason.
My heart goes out to asylum seekers and refugees. But it is really a privilege. Well, it's a privilege, first of all, to be in the United States of America, and I think the state of Alaska. And it's also a privilege to get a driver's license in any state of the Union, including Alaska. So I think we have a right as a sovereign state to set standards for getting a driver's license and for the length of the driver's license. But that said, I'm going to hold the bill. It's my intent to bring it up at the very next meeting. And at that next meeting, we're going to be we have HB 13 honoring. Next meeting will be Tuesday, February 1st, and we'll be honoring concerning the legislature to honor President Ronald Reagan, HB 13, HJR 13, special request license plates. That's HB 19, and then HB 14, executive ethics, legal fees, and family travel. And that's a bill we previously heard. I believe it representing Grunberg.
I appreciated your courtesy on that. I'm sorry I was ill.
That's okay.
For a variety of reasons.
And I have the courtesy also to hear your bill.
Yes.
And we probably won't hold it up.
I know.
Mr. Chairman, just one.
Representative, excuse me, Johansson.
Thank you. I just, before the amendment comes up on Tuesday, just one bit of clarity. I don't know if Ms. Brewster is still online, or if not, then we can have the answer by Tuesday. But a little discrepancy between her testimony of one of these indefinite issues per day and Representative Seaton's characterization of one in the Anchorage area per day. And I'd like to understand if it was just the Anchorage area or one statewide, as she was speaking as statewide director. So,
Ms. Brewster, are you still online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Johansson. I would say that we see, I stated that we see one approximately a day in the Benson office, and that is really hard for me to determine, you know, the other offices, how many they're seeing, but I will contact all of my office managers today to see how many that they estimate may they see a day.
Excellent.
That would be helpful, Mr. Chairman, because I think a lot of these issues relate to coastal Alaska with our food processing, fishing yes. processing areas, and I don't want that to come out at some point later and come back around to bite the bill. If we get it out early and deal with it, would be appropriate.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also think we probably need to settle the issue of whether the DMV is going to subscribe to the $200,000 program so that they can do background checks electronically rather than call the Customs Immigration Service with a check on the background.
As Ms. Brewster explained earlier, that's something future. I don't think it really impacts what we do on this bill. With that, I want to thank everybody for the spirited discussions we have. It is now 9:30, and the House State Affairs will adjourn.